Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, January 6th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Arcata Chamber starts coordinated recovery effort following the devastating downtown fire. Humboldt Sheriff's Office announces state of emergency due to the Arcata fire to receive much-needed help from the state. DEH announces that wet weather testing period begins this week. Stay tuned, those stories and more, coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
After the devastating fire last week, there is a coordinated community fundraising effort to support businesses and locals impacted by the fire. KMUD News talked with Meredith Mayer, executive director of the Arcata Chamber of Commerce, and who is also on the board of Humboldt MAID. She gave a synopsis of the recovery effort, explaining the meeting between different local groups and partners, the collaboration efforts being planned, and the website where you can help people and businesses affected by the fire.
The main point of the recovery effort, we had hosted a meeting yesterday with the city of Arcata and some strategic partners and community members who had expressed interest in either hosting an event or helping. So there was about 20 of us, which included Humboldt MAID, Playhouse Arts, Pay It Forward Humboldt, the Arcata Lodging Alliance, the city of Arcata, and don't think I'm missing anybody, and just discuss what the immediate needs might be, what events might look like if we could create a cohesive landing page for resources, not only for residents and businesses, but also for events that are being hosted throughout the community. So the chamber is overseeing that. We have created a survey that will go out to the businesses in conjunction with the city to evaluate their needs, their immediate needs, what the needs for their employees and staff might be, and keep them connected to city efforts for cleanup and resources to help them with insurance filings and other resources that are available. And Pay It Forward will focus on the residential needs, so the residents in the apartments that were affected. And then as a group, we are basically working together, and we've created a page on the Arcata Chamber of Commerce website that all these organizations will direct to, which will house resources and information on a collective collaborative event occurring the weekend of January 30th through February 1st. And it will culminate on the 1st with a Heroes Parade on the plaza, honoring and thanking the first responders and community members who stepped up in the very emergent time of need during the fire. So that is a basic summary of where we're at and what's going on.
Putting together this coordinated effort was pretty quick and easy, according to Owens.
We're super fortunate that the community is so collaborative and already pretty cohesive. So I think, you know, the chamber, like everyone else, was watching that in such shock. And I think just trying to figure out where our roles were and what our responsibilities were and how we could help. So I gave it kind of a day and got, you know, people were doing a ton of outreach, including myself, to kind of figure out who the players should be and who wanted to be and how that would look. And so I just basically did some outreach over the weekend to those partners and the community members who had kind of been really outspoken about helping or had already started something. Like, for example, Humbrews had already, like, picked a couple nights that they wanted to do an event. And I basically just contacted them all, and we picked a day and had a meeting yesterday. It was pretty cohesive. We had a nice brainstorming session, and people seemed kind of on the same page, and it felt really kind of natural that everyone kind of fell into place and is ready to work really cooperatively, which is just really incredible. So for the Chamber and Humble Made, we really want to be strategic to the businesses and where Pay It Forward Humble comes in, that is dealing with residences and individuals has been kind of their wheelhouse, and so to lean on them to handle that part, but then our organizations can all work together cohesively.
According to the press release from the Arcata Chamber of Commerce, quote, "To support transparency and make it easier for the community to help, the Arcata Chamber will host an interactive map and resource page on its website, highlighting all fundraising events happening through the county in support of businesses affected by the fire. In addition, the Chamber will maintain a centralized list of vetted funding and donation sites, allowing community members and donors to confidently support legitimate relief efforts," end quote. Mayor went into more detail about the site and how they plan to improve it over the next couple of days.
In the next 24 hours, there will be a lot more information added to that. So the map is going to be used for not only people that are hosting events and benefits, but also for some resources, for some mental health resources, for resources that might be needed for rebuilding efforts. And so that will be populated by the individuals and businesses who send us that information, or information that we can garnish off of social media or emails and also verify. So for the event on, I think we're calling it just the Arcata Fire Relief Weekend, the individual venues will all host their own individual events. They will choose the beneficiary of their choosing and what that event might look like, and we will be kind of the source page for people to find out what events are happening at which venues and for who it's benefiting. So kind of like we kind of were inspired by like the Porch Fest that happens out in Sunnybury. I don't know if you've ever attended, but where it would be kind of like an all-day event, and it will be all throughout the community, and retailers, bars, and restaurants, and music venues can all take part by hosting. And so our goal is to really bring the community out for a place to kind of collectively grieve, to collectively be together, and just, like, pool energy, you know, into our community and just, like, show the support together.
The Chamber of Commerce is sending out a needs assessment survey for businesses and employees that were directly impacted by the fire, expected to be sent out at the end of the week. Owens explained it will include questions about finding spaces to be used as temporary storefronts.
We are identifying spaces that could be used as temporary stores for them, storefronts for them, or a joint, like, collective storefront. I'll give an example which has not been verified with them, but like Northtown Books is saying they can order books, but right now they don't have a place to pick up or drop shipments. So if it's valuable to them, then the Chamber will help connect them to the correct resources or space that might be able to allow for them to do that.
There is also plans for a community-wide fundraising event that is in the works. According to the press release, quote, "A series of collaborative events are being planned for January 30th, February 1st, including a multi-day Porch Fest-style crawl across a growing list of participating venues such as Humbrews, Richard's Goat Tavern, and Tea Room, and Arcata Playhouse, breakfast events, live music, and retail shop-hosted fundraisers throughout the weekend, art open houses and a community vigil, and a hero parade honoring impacted businesses, workers, and first responders. Local businesses interested in hosting fundraising activities will be encouraged to coordinate with the Arcata Chamber to ensure shared visibility and alignment," end quote. Owen said there are other events being planned also, and to inform the Chamber of this information so they can keep the website up to date.
So there'll be another separate press release coming out hopefully next week with a little more details, including times for the parade on Sunday. So we'll make sure to get that out to you. And if businesses within Arcata or even outside of Arcata in the community want to host an event but aren't sure how they might help, we have ideas and resources and can either brainstorm with you or connect you to another business that they can partner with. And it looks to me like there are some events that are happening outside of the community. So if people continue to feed the chamber that information, then we'll keep that map and resources page as up to date as possible.
Owens ended the interview talking about the strength of the Arcata community.
I think we live in a pretty unique community. We know that the only people we can rely on are ourselves. And so I think we're pretty lucky to have such a giving and supportive and resilient community. So I know that everyone will pull together and these businesses will get back up on their feet and that we'll find spaces for these residents to call home after this. So, yeah, I think we're lucky. We're lucky we have such a cool community.
For more information, visit their website, arcatachamber.com, and go to the Events tab, where there will be a link for a Fire Relief Resources and Benefits event. On January 3rd, 2026, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office released a press release announcing a state of emergency due to the impact of the structure fire that burned down multiple commercial buildings and apartments. This was announced to receive help from the state because a local emergency proclamation is a prerequisite to requesting state and federal assistance for response and recovery efforts. KMUD talked with Patrick Esch, the acting program manager of Humboldt County Office of Emergency Service. He explained the reason behind the state of emergency and what needs to be done to mitigate the impact after the fire.
There is water runoff associated with that fire because of the fire suppression efforts. A lot of that runoff does include like ash, debris, other potential hazardous substances. And because of that, there's going to be there's a lot of impact, other potential impacts into the water quality, environmental health. And so we need to do a lot of assessments, containment, and the mitigation of those impacts, and that involves not just the city, but the county as well. And so it is important to do a state of emergency. As for the expected timeline, we've reached out to Cal OES. They've already responded, and we're getting resources from them, but it's too early to provide any type of timeline of federal help.
This will be an ongoing effort for the foreseeable future, with everyone doing what they can to help.
We're doing everything we can. We're providing as much assistance as the city of Arcata needs and that we can provide. And what we can't provide, we're seeking assistance from the state. And the state's doing a great job of helping us out and providing those resources as well. And I grew up in Arcata, and I was down at the site, and it's hard to see. And it's a travesty for our community. But with that being said, I know the city of Arcata and the county, we're doing everything we can to help in the recovery effort. And it's going to take time. But we're going to move forward together.
If you have been affected or displaced by the fire, call the American Red Cross at 707-496-8278 to get assistance and needed resources. The Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Environmental Health, or DEH, announced they are starting the wet weather test period for the evaluation of proposed individual on-site wastewater treatment system, or OWTS. The first day of this period began Monday, January 5th, 2026, and will continue, if weather permits, until April 1st, 2026. It will be cut short if adequate rainfall is not consistent for a long period of time during this window. KMUD talked with Patrick Owens, a supervising environmental health specialist. He explained what the testing involves and why it is needed.
There's a couple things that the testing involves. One is percolation testing, where you dig a standard size hole, usually like 12 inches in diameter and 12 inches deep, and take repeated measurements of how long it takes water to go down in the hole. So that's like kind of the standard perc test. Percolation testing. And then the other aspect is installing shallow monitoring wells to measure how high the groundwater comes, you know, close to the ground surface in the wettest time of the year.
This is needed to fit state regulations.
Our regulations, which are based on state regulations, the minimum separation to high groundwater is 24 inches. So if you have less than 24 inches separation to high groundwater in the winter, you're not able to get a septic permit. So there are certain areas of the county that are, you know, pretty shallow groundwater, so we need to test for that. The other thing is making sure that the soil will perk. So if you've got a lot of clay in the soil and the sewage effluent won't percolate into the soil, then it'll, you know, back up into the house or it'll surface on the ground.
And the press release explained that this testing is not required in all regions of the county, but is required for certain locations. Owens went into more detail about the different requirements for the locations and areas that need testing.
There's kind of known areas of the county that have, like, usually like the more the valley areas, low-lying areas that have a lot more clay in the soil that are kind of known to require this. But it really depends. It's a you know, case by case. Usually people hire a private consultant, an engineer or geologist, to do some preliminary testing with, like, backhoe test pits. And if they encounter signs of high groundwater or a lot of clay in the soil, then they have to do the wet weather testing. So, it really depends on the site.
According to the press release, quote, all parties planning to subdivide land or to develop sites with individual OWTS should contact a registered civil engineer, geologist, or other qualified professionals to arrange for testing as early in the wet season as possible. For all sites, the test process will require no less than 3 weeks of monitoring. An early start is highly recommended to ensure completion of testing before the test period closes. If testing is not done with the time required due to lack of rainwater or other issues that arise, Owens said that as long as people get their application in, DHHS will honor the application for the next year. He explained it is rare but has happened before. He broke down the main points of the process.
It depends on the site. If you have lower permeability soil, so generally more clay in the soil, you will have to do percolation testing in addition to the depth of groundwater monitoring. If you have more permeable soils, so like a loam or a sandy loam, you may not have to do percolation testing. There's standard percolation rates based on that soil type that we can use. And so then after doing the site evaluation, the engineer will then come up with a septic system design based on the depth of the groundwater and the percolation rates, and then they submit it to our department for review. So each site is different. There's not one standard size for all properties.
For additional information regarding wet weather testing procedures, call DEH at 707-445-6215 or 800-963-9241. In national news, Senate Dem leaders vows vote on War Powers Act in response to attack on Venezuela as Trump threatens Cuba, others. KPFA's Eileen Alfandari reports.
Top Republican and Democratic congressional leaders were to receive an evening briefing on Venezuela from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and CIA Director John Ratcliffe. Speaking ahead of the briefing, Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Congress and the American people have lots of questions about what the Trump administration plans are for Venezuela.
Most importantly, what the hell does Donald Trump mean when he says the United States now intends to run Venezuela? Does this mean we're now in the business of nation-building Venezuela? Are we going to put troops on the ground? How many? Where? And how much will it cost?
Schumer said President Trump had broken his promise to voters to end U.S. involvement in endless wars. He said the Senate would vote this week on bipartisan legislation invoking the War Powers Act.
The next step for Congress is clear. We must stop Trump's folly by invoking the War Powers Act.
The measure would bar further U.S. military action in Venezuela without congressional authorization. It's co-sponsored by Democratic Senators Tim Kaine of Virginia and California's Adam Schiff and Kentucky Republican Rand Paul. In a written statement this weekend, Schiff said that in the weeks leading up to Saturday's early morning U.S. seizure of President Nicolas Maduro, he and others had warned that the true motive of U.S. naval action off the Venezuelan coast was not drug interdiction, but regime change in an oil-rich nation. The House failed to pass a War Powers resolution last month. Senate Republicans voted down a War Powers measure in November. And Trump apparently has an appetite for further military action after the abduction of Maduro was carried out with no U.S. casualties or loss of military equipment. Trump said in a weekend interview with The Atlantic that we, quote, do need Greenland, absolutely. He doubled down in remarks to reporters, adding, quote, let's talk about Greenland in 20 days. The prime minister of Denmark, which maintains partial governance of Greenland, blasted Trump's comments and warned of catastrophic consequences that would ensue. Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries said the administration needs to be reined in by Congress.
And there is no military action that should be taken in Venezuela, in Greenland, in Panama, in Canada, in Cuba, or anywhere else on this globe without explicit approval by the United States Congress. That's our position. And we're going to work hard to make sure that we pass the legislation necessary to deal with an administration that is clearly out of control.
But Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott said he would welcome further regime change. At a Miami event with members of the Venezuelan community, Scott said with Venezuelan President Maduro removed from power, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel could be next, but not the last.
The fight's not over, but we're going to get there. And this is the beginning of freedom and liberty all across Latin America. It starts with Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, Colombia, all across Latin America. So thanks, everybody, for being here.
Congress approved the War Powers Act in 1973 after the disastrous Vietnam War. But in the subsequent 50-plus years, numerous presidents, both Republicans and Democrats, have taken the U.S. to war without congressional authorization. The ultimate cost? Trillions of U.S. dollars and more than a million lives lost, counting both U.S. soldiers and foreign fighters and civilians. I'm Eileen Alfandary for KPFA News.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Ahead of the next legislative session this month, Arizona Democratic state lawmakers held a town hall at the end of December on MMIP, or Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has details.
Indigenous Peoples Caucus Chair Senator Sally Ann Gonzalez, who is Pascua Yaqui, made no promises.
We will not have solutions for you today.
But she and others spent 3 hours listening.
Listening without action has become a pattern.
Reva Stewart, who is Diné, believes families relive their trauma by testifying with no results.
Legislation without enforcement is not protection. Task force without authority or accountability are not solutions. Meetings without funding are not justice.
Roxanne Barley, who is Kokopa, complained that criteria change for the state's turquoise alert, originally designed to notify the public of indigenous disappearances. Of the 5 alerts, only one has been for a Native American, a teen in Yuma.
That was the lie that we were promised. That was the hoax that we were told.
But Senator Teresa Hatachly, who is Diné, explained how lawmakers compromised.
And that is the ugly truth of politics.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Alaska state health officials continue to recommend the hepatitis B vaccine for all newborns, despite a recent controversial change in federal guidance. The virus has historically seriously impacted Alaska Native communities, as Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
Hepatitis B is a virus spread through bodily fluids and from mother to baby during childbirth. Historically, Alaska has had high rates of hepatitis B, especially among Alaska Native people. In the 1970s, widespread infection led to high rates of liver cancer in Alaska Native children. State Epidemiology Chief Dr. Joe McLaughlin says screening and vaccinations have helped reduce rates of hepatitis B in the state. And McLaughlin says the vaccine is still important in Alaska, which has struggled with high rates of chronic hepatitis B.
This universal birth dosing helps to ensure every baby receives protection, regardless of their location, their access to care, or any follow-up challenges that they might have. This approach has definitely helped reduce disparities in hepatitis B outcomes across Alaska for decades.
Public health experts credit the vaccine with dramatically lowering the risk of developing chronic hepatitis B, serious liver diseases, and liver cancer. For over three decades, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended that all babies across the country get the vaccine at birth. Then last month, the CDC narrowed its guidance, recommending the vaccine only for infants born to women who test positive for the virus or whose status is unknown. The guidance says women who test negative should consult a healthcare provider before vaccinating their newborn. But McLaughlin emphasizes that the CDC also acknowledged that each state has to consider its own hepatitis B rates and risk factors.
Alaska, where the rates are nearly three times the national average, clearly falls into a higher risk category as a state in general. And our data support continuing universal birth dose vaccination to protect infants in Alaska.
Health insurers have said they will continue to cover the hepatitis B vaccine. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Eileen Alfandari and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.